Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Change Leaders Exclusive, where we showcase and learn from world-class change leaders. I'm your host, James Dallas. Today's topic is Dare to Reach Your Full Potential. Our guests are two outstanding people who excel at bringing the best out of others by increasing their boldness. Before we hear from our guests, Becky Blaylock and Yvonne Bryant Johnson, let me share with you how to contact us. My handle is at HJamesDallas, hashtag ChangeMasters. Now, let's hear from our guests. Becky, you have been outstanding in both a corporate setting, a private, your own business. Tell us about your business.
Good morning, James. Good to be here. I'm the managing partner at Advisory Capital, and we do a variety of things, everything from owning real estate and doing IT consulting to doing a lot of leadership development. This came about as a result of writing the book, Dare, mostly working with IT professionals and with young women who aspire to do more and reach their full potential in their careers.
Yvonne, let's hear about you.
Good morning, James, and it's wonderful to be here with you and Beck and my two favorite people. My company is Bryant & Associates. I started it in 1998 when I left AT&T after a great career there. It is an executive coaching, training, and consulting business. And I started it based on the work that I had done at AT&T, and that's just helping to build high-performance teams and helping to bring the best out of people. And that's what we do now. We work to bring the best out of individuals and teams.
And I have seen both of you all in action, so I can attest to you're both great at bringing the best out of people. When people see you, they admire you. Can you talk a little bit about what your journey has been? What were some of the defining moments in your life coming up? Yvonne.
I thought about that a lot. I grew up in Atlanta. I'm from Atlanta. I am not a graded baby like you. I was born in what was one of the few black hospitals back then. My father was a business owner, and he died early. I was 8 years old, and I had four younger sisters. And my mother had to go to work, and she worked 24/7. I learned to multitask. I was the leader of the house. I had to learn to cook, clean, and make A's. It was something that was required, the straight A's, that was the requirement. You're going to go to college, you're going to make it. And that's where my defining moments came from. And also, no matter how tough times were, you always knew they could get better. And when I was in corporate, if I had a bad manager, because the manager can make your life a great place or a horrible place. And we would just wait them out because that's the way it was growing up. When we had a difficult time, we just would pray and wait it out. And you can do that with your managers. If you have a manager you don't like, just pray and wait it out. So those are some defining moments for me. I became someone who learned to multitask and to not let difficulty stop me.
We're going to come back to that bad manager comment because I think we've all had those managers before. Becky, talk to us about, what are some of the events that shaped you, influenced you the most growing up?
You know, I was an Air Force brat growing up, and so we moved all the time. I went to four high schools, three junior highs, and eight elementary schools, and I really loved moving around when I was in elementary school because you're the new kid on the block. But once you get into middle school and high school, it's very difficult to walk into a situation, big school, you know, nobody you know, but you do learn how to just walk in and fit in and adapt. And I never really began to realize until later in my career how important that had been in shaping who I became later in my career. Because I walked into a lot of new situations, not knowing anybody, not really having 100% of the information. And I learned to adapt and survive, you know, much like Yvonne said, she had to survive coming up. You learn to adapt. And I think that ability to adapt and to be willing to try new things is what helped me be successful in a corporate arena. I came along at a time when I first came to work for my company in 78, there were no female vice presidents in the company. you know, sometimes people ask me, was that tough? And I say, well, you know, I was the first woman to hold many of the jobs I was in, but I got to be first. Yeah, it was tough because I had to prove to people that a woman could do it, because this was mm-hmm. the time when Yvonne and I were coming along when people really didn't think women could do these things. So we can look back now with some pride that we did. And the other thing that I think was a defining moment for me was that when I did have an opportunity to showcase my leadership ability, I would really put everything I could into it. One of the things I advise young people is if you have an opportunity to get up and speak in front of a group, do your homework, be prepared, and blow them away, because those opportunities don't come along very often. And I'd have to say that the times I had a chance to present in front of management is when I really got on their radar screen and showed them what I could do.
You all are great at encouraging people, motivating them to really step out of their comfort zone and be bold. When were the times in your career that you had to overcome a fear? And how did you go about doing that?
I want to just piggyback off of what Becky said. I was at AT&T and I was the only woman, the only African-American sales manager. And I was given the carpet industry up in North Georgia. And I would go to the carpet shows and I would look around for anybody that looked like me, female, and it didn't exist. And you just had to just step out there and do what you had to do. And I would go to the golf events, and a lot of times the women would serve, get the beer, and I told them, no, we're going to learn to play golf. And so I started an executive women in golf group up in North Georgia. I said, it's time out for just sitting back and serving, and it's time to play golf. And it was great, and that's what you have to do. You just cannot sit back and just accept anything. You have to be bold and be courageous. And somebody's going to always say something about you. I can go back to being poor and getting on the bus and somebody talking about what you have on. You get over it, you move forward, and you do what you need to do, and it pays off.
Getting over it. Becky, what did you have to get over?
I just have to say that really on a daily basis, I think each and every one of us has to be conscious of stepping outside our comfort zone. Since I wrote my book, I've studied psychology a lot, and a lot of the things that I thought were just a fear that I had, really everybody suffers with a lot of fear, every single person. You have about 65,000 thoughts in a given day, and if you're a normal human being, about 85% of those thoughts are negative, and that's how we've survived. I mean, you want to remember not just to walk out in front of a moving car, stick your hand over a candle flame, and just act anyway. I think learning that and knowing that everybody has these insecurities and that you've got to push yourself every single day to step outside of that helps me be more courageous about taking on risk and challenging myself to step outside that zone, because we all want to be in that comfort zone. That's where you feel safe and you feel valued and you feel accepted. And anytime you push outside of that, you know, there's some risk of failure. But you know what? You're never going to grow. You're never going to reach your full potential if you don't push outside that comfort zone every single day. In fact, I tell people it's a dangerous place to be. And I really didn't have a choice. I'm somebody who had to work three jobs and put myself through undergraduate school. I didn't have money. I had to have a job. And so initially I stepped into the business world not knowing what I was getting myself into. You know, moved to a town where I didn't know anybody. I was sent to Americus, Georgia, where I supervised the meter readers and the customer service reps. And there were a lot of people that said, she's not going to last in that job 2 months. She'll be wanting to, you know, come back to Atlanta. But I had to have the money. I had to have a job. And I was determined I was going to be successful at whatever I did. And there were some jobs, as Yvonne said. I mean, you know, I had some really tough bosses sometimes. I had some people I worked for who I think hoped that I would quit. I've also been very fortunate and had some people who nurtured me and supported me and certainly gave me opportunities and believed in me when I'm not sure I even believed in myself. But when you're in a situation where you got to survive and you've got to, you know, I had school loans to pay back and I had to eat, I had to pay rent, you make it work. My father was always the kind of person who said, don't you come back here with your hand out asking for anything. You know, I think that when you grow up like that, you make it work and you learn just to embrace that fear. And don't let it shut you down.
Becky, you mentioned unsupportive bosses. Yvonne mentioned bad bosses. Let's talk about them, because I think we've all dealt with bad bosses before. I get a lot of questions from people about how to deal with a bad boss. I gave them some bad advice because I, unlike Yvonne, I didn't tell them to pray. Because when I dealt with my bad boss, the first thing I did every morning was to read obituaries and the hope that his name was in there. Okay, but that's not the way to do it. Listeners, that's not the way to do it. Let's hear from the experts. Yvonne, how do you deal with an unsupportive bad boss?
Well, I am just so grateful that times have changed and people cannot just act, you know, bosses cannot just act anyway. There are laws that protect people. And they're the millennials who are not going to take it. And I just think that the changes in the workplace have been very helpful in having people say, you cannot talk to me like that. I had a boss and I expected a lot from this person. And she was just very mean to me. And everybody thought I was her favorite. I'm like, well, this is the way you treat a favorite. And I learned a lot. And I think that they need to be trained. A lot of times, it's not that these are mean, evil people. They just have not been trained. We promote and we hire people who are not ready to be leaders. And I have had to provide leadership throughout my life from when my father died. I had to be the leader in my house. I've always had a leadership role. And I keep doing that now. I'm trying to learn to step back. But I do love providing leadership. And in my business, my goal is to work with managers to teach them the skills, to have them recognize employee performance, to encourage their heart, to coach people, to give them feedback, and to allow themselves to be coached. And I think those are some of the vehicles and tools that can be used to make the workplace a better place. People spend most of their time at work. And if you're going to spend all that time at work, it needs to be at least a place you don't mind going. If you work for a bad boss, it will impact the revenues. It will impact your customers. It will impact employees. It impacts everything. So it's to the benefit of companies to train, to coach managers so that they become leaders. And therefore, you will have a world-class organization and an organization where customers want to do business with you. You improve the customer experience by training managers so that they can move from being a bad manager to a world-class leader. And that is possible.
How many of the bad managers that once they realize that people consider them bad and they get coached, what percentage of them actually take the advice?
You know, I think it depends on whether or not you have a great coach. And I have been called in to coach a person that a company wanted to promote. And we took her through the DISC. And the DISC is an assessment that helps you understand yourself and others better. And this manager learned that it was important to listen to her employee. There are some people who will come in. This one person came in and said, my mother is sick. And the manager said, well, you have time off. That was not enough for that employee. That employee wanted the manager to talk about what she was going through. And so what we try to do is to help the manager understand the employee, and the employee must also understand the manager. It's a two-way street. I mean, people have to respect their leaders also. I just try to get that across. You cannot go in expecting a leader to change and jump and flip for you. We must jump and flip for our customers and for each other.
Jumping, flipping, Becky, what's your advice to people dealing with bad bosses? And then how did you deal with your bad boss? And what advice would you give them?
One of the things I always try to do is to understand people. You know, I think communication is the root of all evil. And sometimes you don't know what you don't know. Inherently, I think most of us want to do a good job. Even bad bosses, I think, want to do a good job. They just may not be very self-aware of how they're coming across in the workforce. And so my philosophy has always been to try to understand where somebody is coming from and try to have a conversation with them. A lot of times people just run from somebody that is a bad boss and won't try to confront them, or at least have a conversation with them and say, help me understand why our relationship is not where it needs to be. I counsel people a lot. If you'll just sit down and have that bold conversation, it's amazing a lot of times what will come out. I had a thing happen to me one time in my career. I had been promoted several times as a manager, and on the third job, I was placed into a job that I really didn't know what I was doing on a daily basis. And there was somebody that had worked for me in two prior roles that followed me to this new role. And 6 months into the job, she came up to me and said, you know, you're a much better leader in this job than you were in the other two jobs where I worked with you. And I said, how can you say that? I was the subject matter expert there. I knew everything, you know, that we were doing. I said, here, I said, I feel like on any daily basis, I'm flying by the seat of my pants. And she said, well, that's the beauty of it. She said, you had a tendency to micromanage in those other jobs. She said, you were the subject matter expert. And she said, you didn't turn loose of the details. She said, here, you can't micromanage because you're not the expert. She said, so you are truly leading. And she said, I really love working with you so much better here than in the other jobs. And it was such a wake-up call to me that, you know, the higher up the ladder you go, the less the job really is about you and about how you execute. It's more about who you surround yourself with and not executing the work, but making sure the work that's done is the right work to be done. And Yvonne's correct. We don't always train people on how to do that. Leadership is a trained skill. Competence is a trained skill, just like public speaking. But a lot of times we just throw people in these jobs and don't teach them these things. And so for me, that was probably the greatest developmental experience I could have had as a leader, was to be taken totally out of my comfort zone and be in an area where I had to execute work and had to depend on other people to get it done. And that was a real wake-up call to me. Not everybody has those you know, realizations. And I think that's why a lot of people get stuck in middle management, is because they're very good at executing, but they really don't ever understand that at that next level up, it's not about executing. It's about the team, who you surround yourself with, how you motivate them, how you take care of those people and help them get the work done.
You said something about having that bold conversation with your boss. It also made me think about Yvonne's comment about it's a two-way street. The bad boss that I had, the way our relationship changed, is that I had that bold conversation with him. I went from talking about him to talking to him. Mm-hmm. And what I learned through that conversation made me look at him in a totally different light. He actually told me that he wanted to change, but it was difficult for him to change. And the fact that what he was doing to me, he was doing to everyone. He realized his flaws, but he just couldn't. And he was actually, to hear him say that to me, actually made me look at him totally different. We wound up having a tremendous relationship afterwards. I just wish that I knew you at that time, because you would have given me that advice to have that bold conversation before I did, because prior to that, it was driving me just crazy.
Okay. Well, you know, this is why I tell people mentors are so important, is because a mentor can sometimes see things like that. They're not as emotionally attached to the situation as you are. And you can even go role play having that conversation with them before you have it with the boss. But, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes having those conversations really opens up, as you said, a whole new perspective of the situation, makes you more sensitive to what that person may be going through. It's scary to have those conversations, but I tell people too, you teach people how to treat you. And if you feel like somebody's not teaching you appropriately, you have every right to advocate for yourself. And in that process, what you may learn is new information that you may learn something about yourself. And even if, you know, you get some feedback about yourself that's not true, it's that perception. And it keeps you from being the emperor or the empress walking around with no clothes on. Because even if it's not true, if it's the perception, then you can work on it and you can fix it. But if you don't know about it, if you're just walking around in the dark, you know, having a terrible relationship with your boss, you're going to be pretty unhappy.
I like what she said about mentors, because we have coaches, mentors, and James talks about in his book, sponsors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the sponsor can call someone over and say, you know, you're just messing up. And it's always good to have someone in the company who can tell you when you are going the wrong way, pull you to the side, and then let you know that you need to do something differently. And what we teach people in companies, my company, is how to manage up. And it's real important that we see the manager as not the enemy. A lot of times I have seen people as the enemy. You don't get anywhere seeing somebody as an enemy. You need to look at how you can be supportive, because a lot of times these leaders, these managers are overwhelmed with their responsibilities. they come into the jobs not being trained, not knowing exactly what to do, and being expected to work and make miracles happen. So I would suggest and recommend that right now, if you're listening and you have a bad boss, then maybe you look for some articles, you look for ways you can support them, you look for ways you can take some of their work and do it. You look for ways that they can have a better life, because sometimes these people are just as unhappy as you are with you. And that's my recommendation, is that you look for mentors, as Becky said, in the workplace, people who have gone through what you've gone through with maybe that same boss. You get a coach, and you also hopefully have someone who will sponsor you to the next level or to the same level in a better job.
You know, everybody needs support. I think you bring up such a good point there, Yvonne. I can remember being under enormous stress when I was the CIO at Southern Company. It's a very difficult job. Some of the highlights for me, my boss didn't call me up on a regular basis and say, "You're doing a good job." That never happened. That doesn't happen when you get to the senior level. Some of the highlights for me was I would get a handwritten note from an employee or a voicemail from an employee telling me I had done something right. And those were the things that got me through. I actually saved those notes. And when the times got really bad, I'd pull those notes out and read them. James, you ever get any notes like that?
Not as many as you did. My notes would be, "Well, look, you didn't mess it up as badly this time as you did last." But the power of positive reinforcement and being able to go back to it. In listening to both of your comments, I'm hearing a theme about learning. You're not born a mad boss. You're not born a leader. Okay? You have to learn how to be one. You've taught a lot of people how to make a difference, not only in their lives, but in the lives of others. Can you talk to us about what's the difference you've seen maybe in women versus men when it comes to confidence? Because you're great at, both of you all are great at coaching both. Any differences that you've seen?
Well, I would just say, I think confidence is something everybody struggles with. I mean, it's human to have a lack of confidence. I do think men sometimes are better at faking it than women are. And that a lot that everybody, though, can be more confident if you surround yourself with a group of people who will affirm you. I tell people, who are the five people you're hanging out with the most? Are they people who pull you down, or are they people who lift you up? And if they're people who pull you down, you might want to reevaluate who's in that group. Because if you want to be a better tennis player, you go find people that are better than you, and you go play tennis with them. And if you want to be perform well at work, what you do is you find people who are experts in the area where you're not, and you find people who will lift you up and inspire you, and surround yourself with those people on a pretty regular basis. And that's how you begin to build your confidence. You know, there's this thing that's alive and well called the imposter syndrome. And 70% of the people in our population have at some point in time suffered with that. And that's where you don't give yourself credit for the many great things that you've accomplished. You attribute your success to luck and to other people. And you feel like at any point in time, people are going to find out that you're an imposter. And when I talk about this, I have so many people come up to me afterwards and say, you described exactly how I feel. If you are a minority in a majority environment, you're three times more likely to suffer with imposter syndrome. So I tell people it's very important, first of all, to recognize this for what it is, and then to find these people who will affirm you and surround yourself with them, because we are all much more willing to take risk. We are all much more confident when we have people who believe in us and who are cheering us on.
I will tell you that I recommend Becky's book, Dare, to the women I coach and to the men. And I also recommend a book called The Confidence Code by Katty Kay and Claire Shipman. It's an excellent book that talks about confidence in women. And a lot of times the women I recommend it to get a little offended. And I say, listen, read the book, because we're talking about high-powered women, how they talk about confidence and how sometimes their confidence gets shaken. And I just say that you have to be bold, and because men can fake it, women can fake it. We can all fake it and act like we are a strong and encouraged. But one thing is, and I've looked at this as a baby boomer, a lot of us didn't play sports, the competitive sports. And if you play competitive sports, you learn a lot. I will never forget when my daughters high school game and she was playing basketball. And I'm going, oh, no, they're pushing my daughter. And that's what men have been doing. You know, you push and it's really not a fight. I mean, and I learned to get over it. And so there have been some advantages that some people who played sports got. And you learn how to just take it. And if your boss gets in your face, it's not a big deal. Get in my face, it might be a big deal. And I want to say it's not just men and women. It's just people and learning to understand people. I've had the hardest time getting along with my good friends from New York because they get in my face and tell me things. And they say, as a Southerner, Yvonne, you say, have a nice day when I'm cursing them out. Therefore, we just have to look at people. I don't just look at male versus female. I really have to look at, were you the oldest? Were you the youngest? Were you the middle child? Are you male? Are you female? There are so many factors that go into what you need to do to coach people, to manage people, to lead people. It's not just about male, female, but the confidence can come from, did you have a dad in the house? Did you have a bossy dad, a bossy mom? Did you have a bossy sister, a bossy brother? All those things matter. So I just hope we look at the whole person and not make it so simple.
Yeah, you know, I interviewed 28 other highly successful women for my book. These were all women who were at the C-suite level and higher. And I asked them, I said, if you could give one piece of advice to a young person entering the workforce today, what would it be? Over and over and over again, I heard the same thing. And that is, be willing to take risks. Be willing to step outside your comfort zone, even when you don't feel like it's where you could be successful, because it's only through taking those risks that you learn truly what it takes to be successful. And there's a lot of research now that says that in particular, women won't put themselves out there for jobs. A big study was done at General Motors and at HP, and they looked at their job posting system. And if a job had 10 criteria, if a man met at least 4 to 6 of those criteria, he was going for the job. For a woman, they had to have all the boxes checked, or at least 9 of the boxes checked before they'd go for the job. And if you're waiting until you have all those boxes checked before you're willing to be confident enough to go for the job, you're waiting too late. Because so much of what helps us grow in our careers is on-the-job training and learning and experience. And a lot of times, if you go into a job, you don't have to be 100% ready for it. It's what you learn on that job that then grows your leadership and helps you get to the next level.
Becky, let me just say this as a baby boomer. As you take risk, know your environment, know the culture. You must understand the culture you're in, because a lot of companies don't accept that. They get rid of the risk takers. It is a benefit to our customers, to our employees, and to everyone if we allow risk taking. It's something that must be encouraged and must not be punished if somebody makes a mistake. So that's the only thing I'd like to add to that, is that we must always understand and know the environment and the people we work with.
And that, too, is why mentors, I think, and sponsors are so important, because they can encourage you and they can provide that safety net. And I think that's been one of the challenges for women in the past, is there have not been a whole lot of safety net there for women so that they felt comfortable taking those risks. But I think the
smartest
smartest companies realize they've got to have these formal mentoring programs so that you can begin to build those safety nets so that women feel comfortable taking those risks.
Absolutely.
I tell people that some of the greatest career moves I made, I would never have made, except that I had the support of the management council of my company who asked me to do it. And I thought, well, they've asked me to do it. So if I go in here and I'm a complete failure, surely they're going to bail me out. But you're much more comfortable doing that if you have people who are willing to provide that support for you, as opposed to going jumping out knowing that it's a culture that doesn't accept risk and that people are going to be out to get you.
The advice you got from the 28 women that you interviewed made me think about the advice that I've gotten from both of you all, and also the support. I wouldn't have written the book if it weren't for the two of you all saying, first, you have something that people could learn from. And then secondly, you can write it. I actually had decided not to write the book because my wife and I, at that time, we were also temporary gardens of two 18-month-old twins. And I just didn't think that we had the time to do it. And I remember calling up Becky. I had actually told the publisher I wouldn't do it. And calling up Becky, and she basically said, boy, get out there and write that book. You can do it. I remember there were times I called up Yvonne. Anytime that I got a large customer service responsibility at both Georgia Pacific and also Medtronic, two totally different industries. But anytime I got those responsibilities, I would call up Yvonne to come work with the groups. And without exception, everyone raised up their game where we went from middle of the road to becoming world class. So the advice that you all have given me and the support are always being your debt for. What advice would you give to our listeners, the one piece of advice you would give to them? Yvonne.
I would like to say, listen to your employees, listen to the people you work with, listen and let them know they're being heard. Repeat back what they said. It's so important for people to feel heard, to know that you have listened to and heard what they have to say. And when you listen to people, you know what changes need to be made. And I always tell people the story about my working with the Ritz-Carlton when I worked for AT&T. They have their vendors go through their customer service training because we know that whoever touches your account needs to understand your mission and needs to understand your expectations. Everybody needs to know that. And I knew that at the Ritz, they were ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And when I walked through their doors, that's who I became. I will say, listen to your employees, your customers, and make sure that everyone understands your mission and they live by the mission as they serve your clients.
Becky.
You know, there are three key messages in my book. And so I don't think any one of these in a vacuum is as powerful as all three of these. So I'm going to talk about three instead of just one, if that's okay, James. And the first one is that you have to begin within. Only you can define what success looks like for you. And as a senior executive at Southern Company, I would get so frustrated because I would be asked to mentor the next generation of leaders that were coming along. And the first question I would ask is, what is it you want? And invariably, the question I got back was, I don't know. And I'd say, well, if you don't know what it is that you want, that's something I can't figure out for you. Only you can figure that out. If you get in the elevator with your CEO and you ask him, where are we taking this company? What are our goals for the next year? He's going to be able to tell you that. Companies are very good about having a mission and having their goals. And you need to have that for you as an individual as well. You need to know what it is. If you get in the elevator with the CEO and he asks you that question, you need to quickly be able to tell him that. There was an interesting book written in the 1920s, not as good a book as Dare or as Leading Change by James Dallas, but it was called Think and Grow Rich. It was written by Napoleon Hill. And Napoleon Hill spent 25 years writing that book. He was hired by Andrew Carnegie to interview 500 of the most successful people of that era of the 1920s. After spending 25 years in interviewing all these people, he came back and they said there was really one thing these very successful people all had in common. And that was that they had a clear vision of what it is that they wanted to accomplish and they expected themselves to do it. So you have to begin within. You have to define success, get focused on it, and it will happen all day long, almost like magic. The second thing is be willing to get out of that comfort zone and go for it. Don't let fear hold you back. You know, recognize the fact that you're having these thoughts and that most of them are negative and begin to realize it for what it is. You know, Yogi Berra, who was one of the great home run hitters of our time, hit more career home runs than anybody. But if you go back and you check the history books, he also led the league in strikeouts many of those years. And what I admire about him is he was willing to get up to the plate and he would swing. And even if he struck out, he learned something about the way that person pitched. So the next time he got up, he was much more likely to hit a home run. And so much of our success is about failure and accepting it and embracing it and not letting it shut us down. So you have to put yourself out there, be willing to take those risks and learn what it takes. So much of it's trial and error is what learns you and grows you to that next level in your career. And then the third thing is it's all about the relationships, who you surround yourself with, who your mentors are, how you invest in other people. I always tell people, if you want to have a great relationship with somebody, figure out what you can do for them. Because if you make investments in other people, they'll be willing to come back and make them in you. Deepak Chopra, I think, is one of the great thinkers of our time. He has this quote that says, the universe has a perfect accounting system. You know, you get out of life what you put into it. And I would just go a step further and tell you, I can tell you the most remarkable stories about where I thought I was helping somebody else, and it came back to help me in a much bigger and better way. So if you're the kind of person who's always out to look for what you can do to help other people, it will come back to you in extremely powerful ways.
You all have invested a lot in people that they are getting a tremendous return on, like myself. The biggest investment you all have given is confidence through encouragement. As we wind up this show, can you talk to us about what do you want your legacy to be, Yvonne?
I have thought about this. I'm a baby boomer. Just had my class reunion, and a number of people have passed away, and it makes you think about your legacy. And I would like for people to say that she made a difference in the lives of other people. I want people to say that Yvonne was kind, she was tough, she was a great teacher and inspirational coach, that she stood for a world, she being me, that I stood for and I stand for a world free of domestic violence and child abuse. Did I stand for a workplace where people loved going to work and they still have time for their family and friends? And I want people to say she stood for love. I believe in being a strong advocate for women and children and for people in the workplace. I get a lot of feedback from the classes I teach. The feedback inspires me. It lets me know that I'm on track with the legacy that I want to leave. They tell me that I've helped them be successful, that I've helped them get breakthroughs in their learning and in their ways they lead, and that they want to do more in the community. That's the legacy I want to leave. I've learned to serve. I grew up in a family where no matter how little you had, you helped someone. And I believe that it's important to be a person that gives back to the community, and that's what I strive to do. And if that's what I leave, I'm happy about that.
Well, you're definitely leaving that legacy, Becky.
You know, James, I wouldn't say what I would like my legacy to be is a lot different than what we just heard Yvonne talk about. I think we all want to make a difference. I have been very blessed in my life. I have a great family. I worked for a wonderful company for many years. My company has done extremely well. My book has done extremely well. And, you know, there's this old saying that to whom much is given, much is expected. And so I would like to think that as much as I've gotten out of this world, I've given back more and have helped other people along the way. Sometimes people say, well, what are you most proud of in the career that you had? And I think, well, when I look back on my career, it wasn't any technology that we rolled out or any project that we led. It was people who were on my team that got promoted and went on and did other things in their lives. That's what I take a lot of pride in. And even today with my book, it doesn't matter how many copies it sells. I'll get a note every now and then from somebody who read it who said, this really made a difference to me. I just want you to know that. And I think, you know, it was worth it. Because, as you know, it's a lot of trouble to write a book. I'm so glad you did, though, James, because you are an incredible role model. You have been for me for years, and I know that this book gives you a platform to get out there and touch so many more lives. So thank you for that.
Well, I want to thank you, Becky, and also you, Yvonne, because you're both leaving a legacy because you're living a legacy. We're coming to the end of this show. And as you know, our audience, that we always end it with a Dallas Diamond. Yes. Wisdom that was forged under pressure. Today's Dallas Diamond comes from comments that we've heard from both Becky and Yvonne. Becky talked about 85% of our thoughts are negative. Yvonne talked about listening. Well, guess where those 85% negative thoughts are coming from? We all have in our minds an itty-bitty crappy committee. That committee is always telling us what we can't do, that we're unworthy, that we shouldn't try. What we have to do is to call that meeting to an end by saying two words, meeting adjourned, meeting adjourned. I want to thank Jerry Adams for telling me about that committee that was in my mind and is also in your mind. So we're going to be bold. We're not going to listen to that committee, and we are going to dare to reach our full potential. This is James Dallas signing off. Until next time, be the change.